Shifting gears, talking about, remember what happened on September 11th? Speaking with Mr. Curtis, I believe joining us right now is Mr. Steve Damish. Mr. Damish, are you there?
Mr. Tachi, good evening.
How are you, sir? Oh,
hello, Joe and Kevin. I'm doing great. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're on
primetime radio.
we got a break that we'll probably take in about 5 or 6 minutes, but you'll stay with us through the break and continue the conversation. First and foremost, what do you feel is the first thing on the plate that we should discuss? I know that we talked about a couple of different topics that we could discuss, whether it was the resurgence of the drug Molly. As I opened the show, I mentioned about the Enterprise, the Gatehouse Media doing such coverage with, you know, the problems with drugs and the epidemic with drugs that we have here in the South Shore. To, you know, you got a race that, you know, that's going, you got a number of races that are going on, political races in the city of Brockton, to some of the violence that we've been seeing in the area. What would you like to take a nibble at before we take a break?
Goodness gracious.
So much to talk about.
There's a lot there. I think Molly is very interesting because, you know, we've, that drug and the designer drugs and the methamphetamines never really made it to New England like everybody feared they might. They thought, you know, the epidemic we're currently facing right now is an opiate epidemic, heroin, OxyContin, Perc 30s, and that was sort of unexpected. What everyone thought would come rushing to this region years ago was the methamphetamine scare. That was the big scare that would come flowing through here. People would be stirring this up in their bathtubs. And in response to that scare, they started protecting the sales of Sudafed. You couldn't even buy a Sudafed off the shelf unless you showed an ID, and only bought 2 boxes at a time because there was an ingredient in that was needed to help you make your drugs. But that never materialized. And, well, you know, we did some research on a story for the last weekend about Molly, and, you know, it became a big issue in Quincy over the weekend and last week because of some overdoses. But that fear of that designer drug and those types of drugs coming to New England, thankfully, never materialized. But in exchange, we got this opiate epidemic that has been countrywide, but hasn't gone as far west as it might have. And I think it's fascinating how one drug sort of took hold here, and the other one that they all feared would come here and ravage this region, that being Molly and designer drugs like that, never happened.
Mm. Do you see this just as a quick fad that we're going to see, or do you feel that this is something that may take the place? I mean, the big things that we see nowadays are heroin and prescription drug abuse, oxycodone, OxyContin.
Right.
Do you see it as being up there talked about, or do you feel that with the couple of quick deaths that we've seen, I shouldn't say quick deaths, but the couple of deaths that have been reported recently, that folks might back away from it because we've seen these results?
Yeah, not even close. This is a blip on the drug radar screen.
Mm.
And it's not just me saying that, but we talked to a bunch of experts about this, people who monitor this, people who run support groups locally, and it's the opiates that are here. The Molly, you know, it kind of actually, from the point of view of us covering the story, Kevin and Joe, got me kind of upset reading all this coverage of these Molly overdoses. As tragic as they have been, we have had hundreds to thousands of opiate overdoses, fatals, that were never investigated.
Mm.
So it's always the new guy in the block that gets all the attention. But the one doing the damage in this region is not. I mean, Molly has definitely hit us hard in one regard, in Quincy especially, but not even close to what heroin, and especially heroin you can snort, has done to this region. The crime epidemic that is affecting everybody locally is not a result of designer drug Molly having been here or coming back here or emerging. It's the well-entrenched opiate epidemic that is causing your house or car or whatever to be burglarized.
Any sign of daylight in regards to the epidemic? I mean, you guys have done a couple of series on this now. Any sign of help for not only the addict, but also the family? Because a lot of folks, they look at the addict and don't realize that there are roots that extend out from that individual to others that are affected by it.
Excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm hoping a couple of guys we wrote about in our Wasted Youth series, let us revisit them, because we have some success stories. You know, addiction is a lifetime disease. It's there. It's always lurking. It can come back after 20 years of being clean. It can come back after 30 years. It can come back after 3 months. But there are some people locally we've written about or have thought about writing about who are success stories, Kevin. And I'm looking to do I'm hoping to do a, and if you're listening and have such a story and want to share it, let me know. I want to do a section or a newspaper or a package on recovery. Because, you know, you don't always hear about the success stories or the good stories, and there are a lot of them out there. And I think the reason being is slowly but surely, we are finally removing the stigma of addiction to the point that people can talk about it, admit it, face up to it, without the fear of being, you know, ostracized and treated like a leper with some sort of contagious disease. You know, it's happening everywhere. It's happening all around us. And I think finally there are some good stories to tell. And I want to do a story on recovery. Now I'm going to show people and talk about people who've gotten their lives back and through no easy feat. I mean, it is hard to overcome addiction. It takes so many, you know, so much effort. But it's still the story of the day that affects us in every way possible. Every time you read a story about, you know, we had a story in the paper about a $10,000 engagement ring being stolen at a bridal shower a few weeks back. We've had a story about gold thefts. We have stories about catalytic converters being stolen under trucks at the, you know, parking areas along Route 24 and other roads. That's all connected to this drug epidemic.
And it's also connected to, I believe, some of the crime and political races in the city of Brockton that we'll actually talk about when we come back from break right here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Don't just sit there. Call in now and voice your opinion. 781-837-4900.
Second half of Monday Night Talk, and still with us, I believe, is the managing editor of The Enterprise. He's also with Gatehouse Media, Mr. Steve Damish. We went into the break talking about issues with drugs and how drugs have caused, you know, it's more than just the person who's addicted to the drugs and how they're maybe stealing from their families or taking from their families in order to support their habit. But I believe that it's something that it's, you know, that affects communities. And I know one of the communities that Mr. Damish covers is the city of Brockton. And currently there's, I believe over the past 2.5 weeks, we've seen a number of violent incidents, 3 homicides in a short span of time. So much so that it's become part of a conversation for some of the folks who are running for office and who will look for voters to go to the polls next Tuesday. Mr. Damish, I guess I would ask you is give me your thoughts on trying to cover some of the things that are going on in that city in regards to crime and how it's having an effect politically with some of the races that we're seeing come on the ballot next week.
Yeah, it's very interesting, the race, Kevin, because crime has always been one of the issues in Brockton. And for a while there, people thought it might not become an issue for the mayoral election because we had a bold stroke by a new candidate, Bill Carpenter, saying he wants to bring in the power plant and buy this very controversial desal water plant and bring revenue into the city. And for a while there, we thought that might be the issue that carried the election and carried through the preliminary. And I'm not so sure anymore, because then we had some crime in Brockton, some high-profile crime, especially the attack on a poor gentleman that resulted in his death. So now the conversation has shifted to crime, and I think I am looking forward to, as a person who's been working there and going there most of my life, and has had family living there and what have you, some solutions, frankly, some ideas that go beyond putting cops on the street. And I think Brocktonians deserve some ideas, deserve some plans, deserve some attention and some answers. I remember for a while there that you couldn't even talk about like gangs in Brockton, because the very thought of talking about gangs would maybe give them some credibility and bring up an issue that people didn't want to discuss. But they are. The candidates are now discussing it, talking about it, and it's very refreshing from a point of view of not just a newspaper editor, but as a person who spends a lot of time in the city. I don't live there, but I live near, and I've been around it a long time, and it's refreshing to hear some talk that is getting deeper than usual.
I have to ask this because you and I have seen a number of political races, not just in the city of Brockton, but you know, all over the South Shore, where individuals, the first thing when they're running, they will promise change, that they will invoke change. They have new ideas, but usually, by the time somebody gets elected, they realize that you can promise all you want, but you can't invoke change by yourself.
Right?
Do you see the same thing with this year's city elections, that folks want to invoke? Folks are promising the world. I mean, you have one mayoral candidate and Ron Matta, who says that he would increase the police force from 180 to 250. Well, that's a fantastic idea. But in today's real world, you have to find a way without taxing. You know, you can't say you'll hold the line on taxes.
Right.
Yet you're willing to increase manpower, which is salaries, which is unemployment, which is health insurance and benefits. That it's, you know, it's not as easy as just saying it.
Three words. Well, maybe one compound word and one regular word. Two-way traffic. How many times has two-way traffic been promised on Main Street in Brockton? Driving from one end of Brockton to the other is still a mess, nearly impossible for downtown resident. Candidate after candidate has promised to turn one-way Main Street into two-way for decades. And what is it? It's still one way. So, yeah, the promises ring hollow after a while. I think people are tired of them. They want some results, and that's why it's refreshing. I think it's a great race, Kevin. Frankly, I can't wait for next week to see how this shakes out in the preliminary. The four candidates are very similar in some ways and very, very different in others, and it's a fascinating race taking shape. To date, happily, I don't think anybody's really talked about two-way traffic anymore on Main Street. I think they've just given up on it. Thank God. So stop talking about or making a promise that is undoable or has not been doable in the last 20 years. Let's move on to issues that we can manage, and that involves street-corner safety and what have you. I think Mr. Matta, I'd love to hear people say add more cops, but, you know, you need to show the plan to the residents if you want their vote. Here's how many cops you want, and here's how I will get them for you. That's what we want to see, and I think during the next few weeks, we will see more and more of that. Thank goodness.
So I have to ask you, if you to evaluate the four, the incumbent and the three candidates, who do you see coming shaking out of next Tuesday's preliminary election? Who are the two that are going to do battle right up until November 5th?
Man, that's a good one. It could be anybody. It's frankly, Kevin, and
Do you think there's any polling? Can I ask you a question? Is there a distinct possibility that the incumbent is left out, or the guy who might have some of the better ideas will be left off? Will come in third in this race?
I don't know. Sure, there is. Of course there is.
Okay.
The bottom line is, we all know Ron Matta has some good ideas and is, professes his love for the city and has taken action and done some good things, but he has no resources. Fact of the matter. I mean, so does he get his name out there enough to campaign? He can't match the resources of an incumbent mayor. It's not even close. Does he have good ideas? Sure he does. Chris McMillan, Bill Carpenter, Linda Balzotti, all have great ideas. All love the city. It's clear. people care about the city is how they will care for it is what will determine how people vote on the 17th. Very interesting race taking shape. Will it be a referendum on the power plant? Well, you know, we have one candidate who has gone with an aggressive stance for it, and three who are, you know, rapidly against it. Mm. Will that factor in? The city elections are fascinating because you don't have the money to spend on polling. There's no exit polling done in previous elections. The turnout, I mean, God, at Rockton, the turnout at some wards can go from 2.5% to 20%. It's crazy.
Well, it's funny because I actually had a chance to speak with John McGarry today.
Right.
And he basically told me that he sees it being 20% turnout because of the number of races. Let's not forget, 2 years ago, you just had the mayor's race for the preliminary, and it was kind of you had the incumbent and two little known candidates two little known opponents up against her.
Right.
You know, and you were lucky to get 5% of the vote, you know, the registered voters out.
Yes. This is just the opposite. And I hope it's that and more, because you hate to see any elections decided. This is an important election. This preliminary is a big vote. The at-large, I think we have 15 people running for eight spots. That's a lot of decisions to make. And, you know, the council, don't forget, in the end, the council runs the city. It's not the mayor. It's a strong council, weak mayor, and they have the power. So the at-large council vote, in many ways, is bigger than the mayoral vote. And it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, who is able to separate themselves from the crowd in that race. But the mayor's race, I find very interesting because of the power plant issue, because of the recent crimes, because of the different personalities involved. I mean, you have two well-known city councilors running. One a former city councilor is now mayor, and one Chris McMillan. And don't underestimate the how much people like them and have voted for them in the past. They have strong support in their wards and across the city. Bill Carpenter has strong support, very well spoken, has some fresh ideas, and he he's presenting a new anti-crime plan.
Ten-point plan, right.
Right, and has brought in somebody else in addition to that to discuss crime. And Ron Matta, you know, don't forget, he's the one who made sure that the state knew about the things happening, the ethics violations regarding the Rockton High School Facilities Department.
Right.
That was because Ron Matta, had the willpower and the strength and the knowledge to bring it to the attention of the state.
Right.
So, I mean, there's several reasons to vote for everyone. And it may come down to reasons to vote against.
Can I ask you a question? And I'm throwing this out there. While the question kind of centers on maybe a particular candidate, but yet a couple of other candidates that are in other races. But I think I'm throwing this out there in general to some of the folks who are listening on the South Shore, because we know every spring that there are usually regular elections. There's not a lot of fanfare. It's not as publicized if somebody has some kind of a financial or fiscal issue. But how do you think folks will vote? We know that there's a couple of candidates, not just one who I know that it made headlines, who filed for bankruptcy three times, but there's been a couple of candidates who filed for bankruptcy or who have had financial issues. You ask yourself, would you vote for a candidate who's had fiscal problems, whether it's in a city the size of Brockton or Duxbury or Pembroke or Abington? Would you vote for, you know, a selectman, somebody who had financial problems? Give me your thoughts on that.
I think it's fascinating. First off, you know, which of us haven't had financial problems? Of course, we haven't gone so far as declaring bankruptcy as Bill Carpenter has.
That's Bill who's running for mayor and who's,
Bill Carpenter,
yes.
Right. It's been,
for folks who don't know.
One story on this a few weeks back.
Yep.
No secret is financial troubles. But you explained it. I'm just fascinated by that. That's another aspect. I'm glad you brought it up, because I'm fascinated to see how people react to that. I'm dying to disconnect the polling on preliminary election data to to see who they voted for and why. Was the power plant a factor? Was Bill Carpenter's bankruptcy enough to not vote for him, or did people relate to that? How much do they think a mayor does regarding a city's budget, or is it owed John Condon? A lot of factors. It's fascinating. I still think Linda Bell's audience is really hard to beat. You can't forget how many years in a row when the at-large races, she was the top vote getter.
Sure.
She has won a lot of elections and easily, including running for mayor initially and in her re-election bid. She is a strong candidate. To take her down, it would not be easy. So it's just fascinating. A lot of aspects, and like you said, that candidate's financial issues is one more aspect that I have no idea how that plays with people, frankly.
But I have to ask you, but again, I digress and ask you.
Sure.
How do you think folks would take it in some of the small communities that they knew that there's somebody running for selectman, looking for a 3-year term in one of the communities that we have here in the South Shore, or let's say Quincy, or Weymouth, or Braintree? What if somebody was running for councilor or mayor in one of those communities and had financial problems like we had a mayoral candidate, Bill Carpenter, in Brockton? Do you feel that folks would be inclined to elect him just if he's somebody who has a good plan to put forth, or do you feel the folks would not want to go with him because he didn't have, the proper fiscal wherewithal to be able to take care of his own house, never mind, a $300 million entity like a city?
Yeah, but this state, we've voted for some crazy people and some crazy things, so who knows? And I bet the average person has no idea of their selectman's financial well-being or how good or bad their selectman's financial well-being or the town manager is. No idea. It's not too often it comes down to that. But this is one of the first times it has, and we're going to find out. We had a previous... we've had previous people run, maybe without the education, to be mayor. I mean, without college degrees. Can they run a city? Is it about the person being a leader and hiring the right people and relying on the right people, or is it about them actually working the numbers? I'm not sure how Brocktonians will respond to that. Mm. There are still people, this is goes back to what we said, there's many, many reasons to vote against. And that's a big one for Carpenter if you are bothered by his financial issues. The mayor's water billing situation that she mishandled a while back, that's on her. That's a big one for her. There's a lot. So how it goes, Kevin, who knows? I'm looking forward to doing some exit polling to ask people, especially the power plant. I'm really curious to hear about, how big an issue that is. We know it is a big issue in Ward 4, and it might become the issue in the general election, or it might become the issue in the next week and a half. But it's fascinating. It's very fascinating, and I think the issues we're finally getting some answers on how big a deal, these are when we talk to voters after they've cast their ballot.
Not to look past what's going on in the city of Brockton, but are you at the slightest bit excited about the state races next year?
Yeah, I'm a local election guy.
Really?
The state races are interesting, and ballot questions I always find very interesting. And just like when we voted to ban dog racing a while back, I thought that was a big deal. And like how no towns in this region passed it. It was every town around here voted to keep the dog track going, but the rest of the state dictated what was happening. So the state races, I think Brockton and the general region is what I find fascinating. And this year we have the candidates and the issues, I think, that will generate a lot of discussion and a big turnout on the 17th. We all hope.
Okay. You had mentioned something that actually kind of struck a tone. You mentioned casinos. We've been watching what's going on up in the Boston area, but yet here in the South Shore. I know that there's a and you mentioned dog racing. Well, there's an individual who lost dog racing on the South Shore, but is making a bid to hopefully have a slots parlor. That's George Carney down in Raynham. Give me your thoughts on that. And I think Bridgewater's making a bid. They might be talking about doing something.
Yeah, and Taunton as well is looking at making a bid. And there could be a casino in Taunton and a slot parlor in Raynham. One thing is clear, this region wants gambling. There's no doubt about it. And a lot of jobs down here. It was funny when that dog track question was passed by the state to ban dog racing in Massachusetts. There was only one section of the state that thoroughly opposed it, and that was the 25 towns almost fitting the enterprise circulation map to a T. It was all the towns down here voted to keep the track going because of the financial implications on the communities down here, all the people connected. I think there were more people connected to that than they realized. Oh, this region wants gambling. It's no surprise. You know, we all travel, myself included, to the casinos in Connecticut, and we would not if they were here. So I think that's going to happen. I would never underestimate George Carney for getting a slot machine and one slot power in Route 138, although he has tons and tons of gravel and waste over there to remove first. It's become like a transfer station over there at the dog track site. But, could there be a slot parlor there? I expect it.
Really?
I do, yeah, I really do. Just knowing his connections and his and this region's desire for it, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see a slot parlor come to Route 138 in Rainham.
Do you think that the Wampanoag Indians are going to still be able to get do a land in trust and have something down there in East Taunton, or do you think that's by the boards?
No, that's still moving ahead as far as we know, isn't it? I believe that section out for Route 140 is still there, and it's still progressing. But who knows, I mean, Middleborough still says it's owed money for its failed agreement. Remember Middleborough years ago, having that July?
Yeah, there was like, they had like 500, they had 500 acres that they had bought, and they had promised,
right.
They had broken an agreement for, X amount a year that they were going to give to the town. I want to say $7 million a year that they were going to give to the town of Middleborough to be able to build in that area. And it was right off of 44, and that never happened.
They thought it was a done deal, and so did the region, and they had celebrations, and this big town meeting vote outdoors under tents, and there was balloons, and a celebration, and, several years later, it's dead. So, who knows? So many moving parts, both locally, statewide, and federal moving parts. When you add those three components together, you get a three-ring circus, and it can be a mess. So, who knows?
There was some that felt that the former leader of the tribe, Glenn Marshall, who later was found out to have some issues with the law, that was kind of a stale deal because he had brokered it.
Right. No, I know that. And it went south fast after that. But remember before that, they practically had the thing built in many people's minds. So I think everyone's working very cautiously. But I wouldn't be surprised if Southeastern Mass, it makes sense when you think about it, because this is the main gateway to head south to Connecticut. You go from here or through here to go gamble in Connecticut, so why wouldn't you put it here somewhere, in this region? You don't go through New Bedford to get to the casinos in Connecticut. You go through Southeastern Mass, you go right through, Route 95 or, 44, and that's Taunton, and that's Southeastern Mass. So it makes a lot of sense to put that here.
Again, we are speaking with Steve Damish, who is with Gatehouse Media. He's also the managing editor of The Enterprise. We just got a couple of minutes left. Anything you want to say in closing about anything that we talked about over the past 35 minutes?
No, I'm looking forward to a big turnout on Election Day. I want to make sure people know that we have a little nice page coming out in tomorrow's paper. A lot of people knew Dr. Fran Frischera, who passed away at the age of 78 last week. Long time, 50-year doctor in the Brockton region, cared for generations of people throughout the region. We have a page full of tributes written by his former patients and people who knew him, running in tomorrow's paper with his picture. I think people, were amazed. You know, there was a 4-hour wait at the the Topeka Funeral Home during calling hours over the weekend. 4 hours to get in and pay your respect. They had to set up a Disney attraction line because it was for people to, you know, with ropes and everything, to get in to pay your respects to Dr. Frischera. So we have something only a local newspaper would do, which is a page devoted to him and what people are said about him in paying their respects.
Do you find is it tougher and tougher to manage a local paper? Do you feel that you the Enterprise, or people like the Enterprise, or the Ledger still has like a niche in this market? But
no doubt about it. You know, we're going up, and there's no doubt about it, we're going up in readership, and companies like Boston.com are going down, and the smaller local papers and Gatehouse Media, you know, I'm very thankful that they own us, and they're still growing and obtaining other newspapers or managing other newspapers. So, you know, we're committed here to this region, to the small local daily, and like I said, we have record readership now when you count the web. Print is holding strong, so we're here because people need us, unlike the larger metro. So we're sticking around, and I think I'm pretty confident Gatehouse Media and papers like the Enterprise are going to survive this whole internet evolution and sort of pioneer a new day in journalism, which I'm proud to be part of.
Anything you want to say, Joe, before we let Steve go?
No, I think I do like, like he mentioned, Gatehouse Media, which spans the entire South Shore, all the local papers and everything. It is a great organization, and they are certainly keeping the local papers going, and I think that's where newspapers' future is at the local level. So it certainly does give hope to the printed media.
It's a good point, Joe, because people should know that we're owned by this big company, this big corporation, but decisions are made by local editors. And there are many companies where the editor has to, send an email back or a message back to an editor somewhere else, not connected to the community, before the decision becomes effective. Gatehouse does not work that way. They let the local editors make the decisions that affect the local people because we live and work here. And that's the way it works best, and that's why Gatehouse is working out well, because they're letting people who live and work in the communities, train journalists, decide the direction of the newspapers, and that works for everybody, especially the readers.
Excellent. Well, we want to thank you for joining us, and we'll definitely look forward to chatting with you probably somewhere in the next couple of weeks.
Kevin and Joe, thank you so much. Sorry to talk too much, Joe, but
that's all right. I like Kevin handle the Brockton issues.
Fair enough.
It's not so much the Brockton issues. We tried to make it a little bit more of a regional thing, but that's okay, Joe. Thanks.
We got Taunton, Middleboro, Rainham, and other towns in there, so we worked a little bit.
We will step, and as I stumble over my words here, folks should check out the Enterprise. The Enterprise online is, what's the website?
EnterpriseNews.com. Always love your input from the community. Thank you.
We'll step aside. We come back. Alex Bezanson and the Hug Foundation. Stay tuned.